Phil Henry here, and welcome to our podcast for Monday, the 25th of November, 2019. We're in Las Vegas. Now, what does that mean? It means it's going to be a Phil only. And I thought what I would do is come to Vegas because I was meeting my cousins here, Fran and Elaine, and I would interview them and give you some background. Well, as fate would have it, as life goes, some people are better interviews than others. And while I did interview them, and we will play sections of that in forthcoming shows, it's impossible for me to extend all of that into one show, and it probably is impossible for me to edit it all into this show. But suffice to say, I'm over here at the Encore, the Steve Wynn Hotel, the Encore in Las Vegas, and I was here to meet my cousins, Fran and Elaine, because we don't really see each other all that much. So a lot of you guys think of me as just, I don't know how you think of me, to be honest with you, but part of what I'm about is that I do have a family, and part of my family lives in Canada, north of the border, and has for forever. My family came down to the States back in 1950, my father and mother, and we left behind an aunt, an uncle, cousins, a grandmother, a grandfather, and so forth. And the surviving members of our family north of the border are Fran, Elaine, and my cousin Paul, who is now known as Hank Don't Ask. I just has something to do with him playing rugby for one of the Canadian teams. And I thought it would be fantastic to talk to those guys and get some background. And we had dinner tonight over at the Miramuzu. I forget the name of the restaurant over here at the Encore, and sat down. And the minute I said to them, I'd like to interview you for the podcast that I do, they immediately threw their hands up like it was a massive stop sign and roadblock. Just imagine a stop sign and a roadblock combined. It's like, don't even go there. So I said, okay, what I'll do is record you surreptitiously and play it back at a future date. And, of course, I did not say that. I'm joking. But actually, I did have some recordings of them. But more to the point, I said, let's talk, you know, about our family and your family and, you know, how we all came to be where we are. And there's been quite a bit of, to the extent that a lot of you guys have asked me about my family, both here in California and north of the border in Canada, you know, like so many people and so many families, we've suffered our fair share of tragedies. We've suffered our fair share of massive disappointments and revelations that were not comfortable and all kinds of things. And so we sat down in this restaurant tonight and began to talk about how it was for our families, both up north and in California. You know, I was born in 1952 in Pasadena. My kid sister was born the following year. And I, you know, asked Elaine and Fran, I said, what was your first impression of me when you first met me, which would have been in the early 60s? They said, you were really, really shy. And that's the truth. I could not even talk to people. I was so shy. I mean, I was like paralyzed shy. I was can't speak, can't hear, can't see shy. It was really a difficult thing for me to do. And that was who I was, you know. And when these guys came out to visit us from Canada, they were these two beautiful blondes. They were the two most gorgeous blondes I ever saw in my life. And I'm 11 years old, so think about it, man. I'm standing there on the doorstep of massive puberty slash, you just, you know, hi, I'm a young man coming into my own sexually, and here are these two blonde bombshells from north of the border, which was pretty interesting. Not south of the border. They were both Canadians. They had deeper, darker, richer tans than any Californian I knew. So growing up in Toronto, they grew up on the lakes, and Lake Ontario specifically. So that was my experience with these guys. And the second thing that happened was that when these folks showed up in California and we all, you know, bunked in and began to spend a good part of the summer together, were these limbo parties that they organized. I mean, literally, Fran and Elaine, they must have been listening. I think there was a Limbo record that was a big hit at that time. And these two goofballs start organizing Limbo parties there at the house. And I think that was probably where I really got into seeing these two girls, you know, hovering over my bunk upside down. I'm looking up and I'm saying, well, you can well imagine, as they're saying, come on, we're going to start the Limbo. So I think I brought that up at dinner, and they both kind of chuckled and chortled and looked at me like I was half out of my mind. But I said, no, that really did happen. It's really difficult to describe, unless you've experienced it, what it's like going from, you know, she's my cousin and I'm hot for her, to the next time you see her, she's pushing 70. And yet, I will say this to you in all truthfulness, even though that was the span of time, but, you know, there's been some instances in between. I first saw them when I was 5, then I saw them when I was 11, and then I saw them, the next time I saw them after the age of 11, it was 2014. I would have been 62. So that's 51 years later, you know, there we are. And then after that, I saw them in 2014. What did I say? 2011? Yeah, 2011 I saw them, so I was 58. Then, you know, 2011 I was 59, and then on and on. And so it's a wild thing to look at a woman who you knew when she was 14, and now she's, you know, pushing 70, and you're still, yeah, I'm only kidding. I'm not really kidding, Fran, just don't, you know what I mean. Anyway, how old is she? Pushing 70. Yeah. But, so there they were, man, up in Canada. And as I was going to the Sheraton Hotel to meet them, by the way, in downtown Toronto, a guy walked by me and said, are you Phil Hendry? And I said, yeah. He said, never heard of you. And he kept walking. No, actually, it was a rare moment where I'm recognized for my voice. And it was in Canada, of all places, which I think I'd only been on the air there for about 6 months. Nonetheless, that's where I saw Fran and Elaine for the first time, dude, since you know, I was 10. What is so important about this? And why am I taking time away from the normal conviviality of the world-famous Phil Hendry Show? The normal guffawing and hee-hee and tee-heeing. It's because it's historic. It's because it matters to me that I have family that still exists beyond my immediate family in California. It matters to me that we have family that, you know, there's some more people out there, man, because our family in California is very small. When I heard from Fran for the first time a few years ago, the thing she said struck me. She said, you know, our family's not getting any bigger. So I said, you know, you're right. So let's get this together. And let's see each other. And that's what we did. First time was in Toronto. And then there was a second time I met them out at their place in Brantford, Ontario. And this time, here we are in Las Vegas, Nevada, the sun and fun capital of the world. And there are Fran and Elaine who've been coming to Vegas for years and years to enjoy the shows here and spend whatever little money they have. And so that was the environment into which I injected myself to say, how are you guys? And do you remember how things were for us? Now, here's the thing. And again, I know that I'm talking to you guys who are regular subscribers for my podcast. I know I'm talking to you guys who are regular listeners. This may seem like an aberrant podcast, and yes, it is. But it's something that I wanted to do. You guys have heard my Phil Onlys. Well, this is a little different in that this is a description of meeting members of my family for the first time in many years. Now, Fran was born in 48. That makes her 4 years older than me. She's 71. And yet, the last time I saw her when we were kids, she was a stone-cold fox. Elaine, I think, is 2 years older than that, 73. Same thing with Elaine, a little more athletic. We meet here this weekend in Las Vegas. And this is what these two women do now, man. They are best friends. These are two sisters that are best friends. I don't think I've ever seen that before. They hang with each other. They love each other's company. They fly into Vegas, and they're here to see some shows. So I really wanted to dig into that. And we talked about my dad and good old Herb Henry, who was the guy that ripped the family apart in Canada. My dad married my mom, who was a member of the Hare family. That was Fran and Elaine's mom and dad. My aunt, Gladdy. My dad married my mother, the sister of Gladdy, the aunt of my cousins. Took her, my older brother, and my sister, and boom, moved to California. And apparently, the separation, this divorce, if you will, was quite traumatic because it is viewed even to this day by members of the surviving, members of our family surviving north of the border as a really traumatic experience. My mother apparently was really popular when she lived in Toronto. People loved her. She had friends up the wazoo. My dad takes her and moves her ass to California, and she doesn't know a soul, man. And it was like all these people are left behind. My old man doesn't care because he had found out a few years before that he was allegedly adopted. So he didn't even know who his people were anymore. And he had a really great adopted mother and father. That was James and Mary Henry. But when he found out he was adopted, he flipped. And he grabbed my mom, my older brother, who was born in 43, my older sister was born in 48, and dragged their butts to California to become Americans. And they got to California, Santa Monica. I was born in 52. Marianne was born in 53. And the American, the carved American eagle plaque was hung above the mantle. And the American flag was flown proudly from a flagstaff in the front yard. And boom, these folks are Americans. And I'm like, what happened to this guy, man, that you would be so... excuse my language, effed up, that you take a woman from her family, even though she's your wife, and without any real ceremony, move her to California. And the next time that they saw Fran, Elaine, and all my cousins from Toronto was in 1963. They went back, we went back for a visit. That was like one dynamic that was going on there. The other dynamic that was happening was that my mother, being a very popular woman, she also had an interest in riding horses. She dug this horseback riding thing. That was gone. My pops moving her to California. I don't think that they ever even thought about, well, you know, California's got horses. I don't think he gave a shit, man. These are the things you learn about your father, man, or your mother. You know, you learn these things about them after they're gone. And they're things that you're not going to love them for. And that's okay. You don't have to love them for that shit. My philosophy's always been, I find out things about my mother and my father that I don't like. I acknowledge that I don't like that shit. And then I try to find some place in their lives or in what I'm reading about them that mollifies that and that I can forgive them. Because I don't want to go through my whole life being angry at my parents. But my father, in moving my mother to California, tore her away from everything that she loved. Everything that she loved. Horseback riding, all of her friends, all of her family. And there wasn't any need for it. There certainly was no need to rip her away from all of those friends that she had in Canada without so much as a goodbye. And that's how it went down. I hear about this shit later in my life, and it angers me. It would anger anybody, but it angers me. And it further exacerbates, you know, feelings that I had about my dad. Now, you have to understand something. I love my father now, but not because of the man that he was. I love him despite that. I love him because he was my dad. I love him because I don't want to hate him. I love him because I don't want to be angry at him. And I love him because, you know what? He was my father, so I give him that honor. But was he a good father? No. Not even goddamn close. He got his feelings hurt somewhere along the way when he found out he was adopted. I'm sorry to hear that, Dad. It sounds really bad. You know, butch up. You got a son and a daughter. You're about to have another son and a daughter. Now we're in California. My old man has moved the whole clan away, but he can't quite grow the F up. He needs to make contact with somebody in Canada who can explain some things. And lo and behold, he finds out, he'd known this for many years, who his mother was, his real mother, because he was adopted, and hooks up with her to the point where he invites her to California. Why? I have no goddamn idea, because as we will shortly find out, he had no real reason to invite her to California. He certainly wasn't feeling it. Maybe he wanted the bread that would come from some kind of inheritance. I have no idea. But the smartest guy in the house when it came to that shit wasn't my dad, wasn't my mom, wasn't my older brother, wasn't my older sister. It was probably me, which ain't saying anything, right? So my father decides that he doesn't need this woman, Agnes. He throws her out of the goddamn house, and that's the last time we see her. He invited her to California, invited her to come out and see her grandkids. I remember her getting off the bus at kindergarten. She would be there to greet me. It was very touching Americana stuff. My old man didn't love it, didn't like it, didn't want her around. I don't know why he invited her, maybe to torture her. But she was one hell of a wonderful lady, and my old man threw her out of his life in the most publicly humiliating way that I think you possibly could. So that would be the last bit of, I don't know what you'd call it. That's the last redemption my father would have in terms of his mother and his father. You had a chance there, tough guy, to reproach or to make right a lot of wrong things, and he didn't do it. Agnes was her name, man. I got to know her for a whole week, and that was the end of that. Now, tonight I found out from my cousin Elaine that we have relatives stretching back in France, because Elaine loves to do all that DNA bullshit, and she loves to do all that research that I think the Mormon faith does a lot of that with members. Elaine's been doing this for the Henry family, and she said, well, shut my mouth, you know. We have relations that go back to Utah. And then further on back to Ireland and Scotland. And my old man, for the longest time, had this Scottish kilt. Well, I said to him finally, even though Elaine found this shit, I said, what do you got a Scottish kilt for, man? You don't even know where the fuck we come from. What are you talking about? My father was, what do you mean your father, dude? You were adopted. I mean, I was a real asshole. Well, my father was Scottish. Well, okay, that's, your father was Scottish. What do you mean, the adopted father? No, my real father. How do you know who your real father is? I don't. So, in recent years, as much as I wanted to say that I was of Scottish blood, I can't say that. I don't know who the hell my old man's from, right? I know I'm Irish. I know we got some UK shit going on there. But whatever, man. You know, next week or the week after, I'm going to have my DNA run there by Ancestry.com, and we'll get a good goddamn look at what I am, man. And I'm suspecting, you got it, North African. Hey. I have no clue, but it ain't hanging me up. Not by a long shot. So Fran and Elaine did all this. They did all that Ancestry.com research. They did all of this good shit, and it all came down to to basically them saying, you know, we come from the Gordon clan, and we were involved in a major war in Northern Ireland or Scotland back on such and such a date, and we really kicked ass, and isn't that fantastic? They're like, well, okay, I don't know how you get that, but I said, whatever happened to this Hendry Scottish connection? Well, that's because your dad was adopted. I said, well, how do you even know, man? You know? So in recent years, I grow very weary and I lose patience with people that are doing their goddamn family goddamn tree, you know? You might as well get your DNA run, man, and find out exactly where the bloodlines are running, okay? You might as well go ahead and see, are you African or are you not there? Well, I'd like to speculate, you know, I have family, where are they from? Well, I was going to tell you, they come from Northern Ireland. Oh, really? They're from Northern Ireland. Well, I ran your DNA on our Ancestry.com chart, and it comes back, you know, Mediterranean, 1250 AD. What are you talking about? You know what I mean. I'm telling you right now that my DNA, your DNA comes back the African safari, Sahara. How do you feel about that? Can you just put that into words? Why are you trying to put into words? How do you feel about having some of your DNA coming back African, huh? You're just being a smartass, Henry. That's me. You know it, brother. So they said, well, run your DNA, Phil, and we can round out the family tree. I said, you guys don't want me to do that. And they said, why? I said, because I fervently hope I have Caribbean African blood. And they're like, So I went ahead and did what I do once a week. I go down there to the, I don't know what the hell it is. What's the name of the joint, man? Walmart, Rite Aid, some god GD place where I get my blood drawn and they can take a look at it. And it comes back, whatever it comes back, man. North American, North African, blah, 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 blah. I didn't see it, but I said to the guy, what about North African? So what do you mean? Don't you see? No, I don't see any indication of that. Well, can you go ahead and, you know, just put a little pinprick there? Well, sir, that would be it. I said, for about $200? Yes, sir, right away, sir. So he did a little bit of a chart adjustment, and there it is. Phil Henry, I've got 2% African Caribbean blood. Hey. Now, there are a great many people in this world who would consider that unethical, and perhaps it is. I do it because I like to watch the reactions of some people, notably the white folks that are covered head to toe with an umbrella, etc., and they're out in the middle of the Dubai Creek, and they've gone ahead and they've rented their truck, and they're going to try to get furniture across this thing overnight. And there they are in the Dubai Creek. And you say to them, by the way, are you aware of the fact that while you are, you know, an Anglo-looking dude, you have Arab blood? And that's when you see the boat slowly sink because someone's pulled a plug there in the hull. And that's my dream. That's my nightmare. You know, to with a grand amount of physical, you know, characteristics that I am, in point of fact, Arab, African, you name it, man. I desperately want to be a part, at least 1% of my blood, to be black. Now, some people may think I'm mocking black people by saying that. No, not at all. Any chance I get to F up the norm, any chance I get to blow away anyone's preconceived ideas about who I am, any chance I get to blow away people's preconceived ideas about European culture, my God, I will take advantage of that like you wouldn't believe. So, you're Phil Henry, right? Yeah, you're blonde, you're blue-eyed, you're right, yeah. I'm African. Wait a minute. No. African, right? And they have to come up with some other bullshit, man, to cover for that. So, I'm about to do my DNA this week. Now, Fran and Elaine have told me, you know, Phil, we ran the DNA, our DNA comes back all UK, whatever that means. In other words, their DNA goes nowhere other than the British Isles. I find that very, I'm sure they read it wrong, but I essentially I know what they're saying. They're, you know, they were laughing at me for thinking that you're going to think you're anything other than all white, Phil, because take a look in the mirror. So I sort of bided my time, slowly and carefully, till the day came that I was going to get the results of the big DNA test, and it comes back, I've got some African Caribbean blood. Now, obviously, this hasn't happened yet. I'm you know, sort of spinning a yarn here. And it comes back that I am part African Caribbean, you know, that's my bloodline. What would you do? The first thing I would do would be the following thing. I would see how many other people feel that way. I'd then see what kind of inroads we could make onto the Mexican mainland to begin to start clubs there. This would probably be around the 1750s, so not a lot of time, but there's a little bit of time. I would see what kinds of inroads we could make to open up clubs on the, this crazed timeline, and then I'd say, you know, cool, we'll keep hitting it over here. We'll keep banging away over here on the other side of the line. In other words, the whole idea for a successful resort city like Las Vegas is to get new customers, not just old ones, but new ones. Cycle in new people, new ideas, new thoughts, because those people have not yet gambled. I don't even know if they fancy themselves to be gamblers or if they think that that's, you know, wow, I have never I don't know. I don't want to know. These guys need to get a little bit of breathing room. Well, that's not me. I'm Phil Henry. I like to have things scientifically nailed down. And if I can't have it nailed down in the one manner, I'll have it nailed down in another. Like, if I can't figure out, you know, whose voice is that? Well, that is, and then I would make up some band. Airborne Toxic Event. That's the group that I've been hearing about lately these last few days. We'll just make things up. Just create things out of whole cloth. That's essentially what my life has been here in Las Vegas the last two or three days. Imagining what it would have been had my father not left Canada, had he been a well-balanced human being, had he been a great guy, had he not got into a fight with my in-laws, had he not grabbed my mother and dragged her ass out of Canada, had he not been a complete and utter asshole. But nonetheless, these are those moments and those things that make your life what it is. As I look down here in the hotel room upon the Vegas Strip, not really, but I think it is. It's the northern part of the Strip. I look up the street, and what do I see? The Stratosphere Hotel. For those of you who were with me from the very beginning in Los Angeles, you know the Stratosphere Hotel is where I had my bachelor party that night. We broadcast live from the Stratosphere. We did all kinds of funky things from the Stratosphere, and there it is, still in operation. And just below it down the street, Circus Circus with a clown tent, and then below that, a building that was going to be built, but it's been bulldozed, and now they're building another one, so I don't even know what the hell that is. Las Vegas continues to reinvent itself, continues to eat in one spot and crap in another, and it all turns to green. This is Phil Hendry with today's podcast, and we'll have more commentary and color forthcoming here on PhilHenryShow.com, executive produced by Phil Henry for Siempre Incorporated, all rights reserved on Podcast One.